You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Doug Gefeller.
Welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller, but before we start, let me just remind you that my business partner, Rick Franzi, and I co-host the Critical Mass radio shows, which air every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m., all brought to you live right here, if that's where you're at, on octalkradio.net. That's talk radio, so let me give you the call-in numbers, 949-713-6443 or 949-713-6447. If you'd like to participate in the discussion, if you have an opinion, if you want to disagree, hey, whatever, we'd be glad to hear from you. So give us a call, and we will work you into today's show. Well, you know, it's a beautiful sunny day here in Fountain Valley, Orange County, and we're going to talk about happiness. What would be a better topic on a day like this other than happiness? So why would we talk about happiness? Well, let's just recap who this show is really for. Not that I'm going to ask you to hang up and not listen. Whoever you are out there, we're glad to have you here. But, you know, the show has been designed for basically two audiences. One, we appeal to people in the HR profession, whether they're service providers or whether they're running the HR operations within a company. And our second audience is coaches, whether you are a coach providing coaching services to clients or whether you're a client looking to use a coach or looking to find out how to use your coach even better. Those are the kind of the two audiences that we really gear our program for. And some weeks on this show, the topics are maybe more relevant to people in the HR field. Sometimes maybe they're more relevant to those in the coaching field. But let me just say that I think today's topic, happiness, is relevant to absolutely both audiences. And why do I say that? Well, for those of you in the HR area, what is more important than profits, staffing, retention and recruiting, and your customers? You know, that is really the key thing. That's what HR is all about. I mean, I hesitate to say that because there's been books written defining what HR is all about. But from my perspective, you boil it down to staffing, customers, and profit, and we go from there. Well, why would a topic of happiness be important to those of you concerned with those three audiences? Well, you know, I've mentioned it before on this show, but I'm going to mention it again because I think it is a landmark book, and that's a book by Tom Rath, R-A-T-H, called Vital Friends. Tom makes a couple of statements based upon in his book, all of which are based upon his the Gallup organization survey of companies. Interesting statement. He starts out, nearly one-third of the 80,000 managers and leaders that were interviewed by Gallup for this book agreed with the statement that, quote, familiarity breeds contempt. Now, where are you going to go with friends in the workplace if you believe that familiarity brings contempt? He goes on to say that their research said that, in fact, some companies outright forbid close relationships between employees. There's the fear that employees get together to bellyache about bosses or about the company itself. And as a result, only 18% of people who work for 18% of the people work for organizations that provide opportunities to develop friendships on the job, that most companies really discourage workplace friendships. Well, you know, this does not sound like a happy topic here as we're starting out, but I'm going to get to it. You know, in his book, Tom makes two major points. One is that having friends at work is very beneficial to the employer. Wake up, HR people. With a best friend at work, you're much more likely to be productive. Without a best friend at work, there's only a 1 in 12 chance you'll feel engaged. 1 in 12. With three good friends at work, you're 96% more likely to be extremely satisfied with your life. These are not just numbers that Rath dreamed up. These are all based upon the Gallup survey. If that doesn't convince you, and you know, having a best friend is really all about happiness. You know, he says that employee satisfaction jumps almost 50% when they have close friendships at work. Shows that it also doubles the chance that the worker will have a favorable perception of their pay. Hey, what? Let's go back on that. If your employees have close friendships at work, it doubles the chance that they will have a favorable perception of their pay. Wow, that is certainly worth the price of admission today. When we ask people if they would rather have a best friend at work or a 10% pay raise, people with at least three close friends at work were 96% more likely to be extremely satisfied. And those who were given the choice of a best friend or a 10% pay raise, having the friend clearly won the results of that. I don't have the exact statistics, but it was the winner in that particular category. Just to wrap up these statistics, he says that employers can help to promote workplace friendships by creating a fund that pays for employee outings with each other and their families. In addition, they can ensure that their office includes places where people can socialize. You know, this is amazing statistics. So if I've got a best friend, I mean, if you've got friends, aren't you happier? Isn't that what we're talking about today, happiness? If you don't have friends, aren't you less happy? I think that's true for most of us. You know, that's the first point that he makes in his book, is really that those statistics support the fact that it's beneficial for everybody, the employer and the employee, if the employee has best friends. The second point that he makes in his book, or the second major point that he makes in his book, is that you can't expect all your friends to be all things to you. He says that different friends fulfill different needs, and then he goes on to describe the type of friendships. And he says there's eight types of friends, or eight areas where your friendship provides needs that you have. He identifies these as the builder friend. These are friends that are motivators and coaches. They push you. They know your strengths. They provide moral support. Or you may have friends that we would call champions. They stand up for you. They sing your praises. They thrive on your accomplishments and happiness. Or you may have friends that you put in the collaborator category. These are friends that share similar interests, ambitions, and passion. They do a lot with you. You may have friends that fall in the companion category. They're always there for you. They make sacrifices for you. They're the first person you call when something goes right or something goes wrong. What about those friends that we think of as connectors? They're always introducing you to other people. They seem to know everybody. And the last category, number eight in his list, is energizers. These are your fun friends. These are the people that make good days great. And he says, you know, it's unlikely that one person fulfills all of those roles in your life in terms of friendship. So what he's pointing out is that as we look at our friendships, do we have friends that we can catalog in these eight different categories? Maybe there's four that fill the eight categories. Maybe two fill it. Probably don't need eight people to fill it. There's some overlap here. But he goes on to say that, you know, if you have these kinds of friendships, then you're going to be happier at work. If you're happier at work, you're more productive at work. If you're more productive at work, you're less likely to leave. You're more likely to refer your company to other people when they're recruiting employees. Happiness. It all boils down to happiness. So from an HR perspective, creating an environment, a happy environment, where people can make and have friendships, pays good money. It produces bottom line profits to you, the employer. It makes your HR job easier. It's better for retention and better for recruiting. Guess what? If I've got friends at work and I'm happier at work, what do you think my relationship is with our customers? Absolutely. Much better. We have a better customer relationship. So that's kind of why we're talking about happiness today when we talk to the HR audience, and we're going to say more about that. But before the coaches sign off the call here, let me let me address the coaches. Why, as a coach or a client, are you concerned about happiness? Does anybody come to you as a coach and say, you know, I'd like you to coach me into being happier? I haven't found that yet myself in 18 years of coaching. No one's approached me with that as their beginning statement. But, you know, happiness is described with lots of other words. It might be encouragement. It might be other things. You know, happiness in terms, and what Rath is talking about with friends and kind of the theme I'm on here today is happiness involves relationships that add value to what you're doing. It's having fit relationships. Just like you want to go to the gym, this is our first of the year speech, you go to the gym to get fit, to work off all that holiday fat that you stored away, that sugar overload that you're trying to get through in the afternoon. And you want to be better. You want to be better fit. You want to live longer. You want to be happier. You know that when you're physically fit, you have more energy. You're more creative. Everything seems better. Hey, you're happier. So what do we need to do as coaches to create better relationship fits for people? Well, you know, a person that I really respect, Bob Shank, who runs the master's program, not only here in Orange County, but throughout the U.S., talks about seven things that you need to create good, healthy relationships, to have a good, healthy relationship fit. Number one is compassion. This is the ability to connect in a caring way with the feeling of another person, usually at their moments of greatest need. So happiness is also compassion. You know, if you've got compassion, when I need somebody to understand what I'm going through, when I need to share it with you, whether it's my success today or whether it's the trials I'm going through. Another area for good relationship fit is availability. It's the decision to value being with another person because of their inherent value, to seek the chance to be with them for the purpose of placing yourself in service to them. What does that mean? Availability means that I want to be available when you need me. I'm there for you. You know that when you call me, you send me the email, you send me the text message, you get on the phone, hey, you come to my house, you come to my place of business, that I'm going to be available. I'm not the kind of person that says, hey, we're too busy. So availability is part of this happiness definition or relationship fits. Forgiveness, the third one, the willingness to relinquish your pursuit of justice in response to the decision by the person who's wronged you, to accept responsibility for their actions and to seek restoration. Forgiveness. Forgiveness doesn't mean that we've met halfway. Forgiveness means that I'm going to forgive what you did, whether it was right or wrong, whether I liked it or didn't like it, whether I understand why you did it or didn't do it. Forgiveness. Encouragement is another category here, part of our happiness definitions. Encouragement. The commitment to instill another person with the hope and the resolve to act beyond their fears, to give them to combat that sense of insufficiency that we sometimes have. You know, as a coach, encouragement, I think, is one of the primary products that we deliver. I don't think I have ever talked to my coach in the 7 or 8 years that she has been coaching me that I didn't hang up feeling better about myself and my life because of the conversation with her. Now, I'm not going to say that she has given me the solutions to all my problems, to any of my problems, but she certainly encouraged me in my pursuit of those solutions. She encouraged me in my dealing with the trials and tribulations of life. Encouragement is what you want to provide. Who did you encourage today? You know, if you're a coach, that's number one on your list of things to make sure your clients walk away with. I don't mean a false sense of encouragement. I don't mean that attitude that says, hey, go for it. You can be president of the United States when you don't even have a college education. Come on. It's just not going to happen. Encouragement is also realistic. Honor is another category. The readiness to direct applause towards those who deserve it while resisting the temptation to seek and accept it for yourself. So, part of our fitness checklist here for relationships is, are we honoring the other person? honoring meaning? Are we willing to let them take credit? Are we looking for areas to give them credit and acknowledge what they've done? You know, it's a sad state of affairs when as managers or as coaches, we're so busy with our tasks that we don't take time to acknowledge what the people we're working with have accomplished. How many times have I heard somebody tell me how great one of their employees was yesterday, today, what a great job they did on something. But when I dug a little deeper, I found out they never shared that with the employee. You need to let your friends know. You need to let your staff know. You need to let your employees know. You need to let your clients know. That's part of what we're doing here. Acceptance. The choice to value and harmonize with other people even when they're different than you. Accepting people the way they are. Recognizing that, hey, you are different than me. And that we are going to get along and I'm not going to be troubled by the fact that you're different than I am. The last one here on Bob Shank's list is submission. This is the capacity to defer to the authority or the needs of another person instead of demanding your portion. No, I think that says a lot right there, you know. Submission, recognizing everything doesn't have to be 50-50. We don't have to have an exact even split between things. Well, you know, that's my start off there. That's why we're talking about happiness today. That's what's in this discussion for HR people. That's what's in this discussion for coaches. So before we get into the happiness, hey, we've got a commercial for you. So just hold on for a minute, and I'll be right back.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Okay, we're back and we're talking about happiness, but before we do that, let me just tell you a little bit. You know, here at the Coaching Perspective, we have been coaching executives and business owners for 18 years, all under the banner of the Coaching Perspective, which is part of the Critical Mass for Business Service Group. You know, our primary focus is helping to create more effective management teams. We work with both existing and new management teams and project teams. And in all cases, our goal is to increase the productivity of the team and the individual member. In addition to our teamwork, we work with individuals from the top executive to the newest entry-level position. We coach people who want to sharpen particular business skills. We run communication and leadership workshops. And I'm the lead partner for our coaching practice. I'm a master certified coach, a past president of the Orange County chapter of the International Coach Federation. And my coaching training was done through CTI, the Coaches Training Institute. So that's all about us as a coach. So today we're talking about happiness. Well, you know, part of what we do here at Critical Mass is we create and facilitate CEO peer groups. What is a CEO peer group? These are groups of CEOs or business owners ranging from startup companies to billion-dollar companies. These are groups that meet once a month for a half day, 8 to 10 people in the group, and they sort of function as an advisory board, a mastermind group, a peer group, whatever you want to call it, for each other. It's a place for them to get together and share what are their issues that they maybe can't talk about with their staff, and get perspective from other people in non-competitive companies who can share with them, hey, I had that same issue, and this is what I did right, or this is what I did wrong. Maybe I don't understand the issue. Can you explain it more to me? In which case, we might find out that wasn't the real issue, or we might find the solution. But that's what our CEO peer groups are all about. Well, once a year, we take our members and their spouses away for a two-day program that we call Strategies for Success. Strategies for Success for us is always about the same thing every year. It's about focusing on your career not your business, but your career calling, and focusing on your personal life and looking at what are the areas of congruency and where is there some disconnect in those two? And have you looked at them lately and are you on track? Are you proceeding with the way you wanted to? You know, we get so busy with running our businesses day to day that we sometimes forget to step back and look at our career path. I mean, you know, if I'm starting out and I'm a stock boy, it's pretty easy to look at it and say, you know, my career path is if I do this really good, I want to move my way up to warehouse manager. And if I do that really good, maybe I can be regional warehouse manager. And someday maybe I'll be vice president of facilities. What's your career path when it's already your company, you own it, and you're president? You know, most of us still have a career path. Is it another company that you want to start? Is it taking this company someplace significant? So we look in this Strategies for Success weekend, we look at these two issues of career path and personal life with the executive and with their spouses or significant other. And each year, while it's the same goal, we look at it around a different theme, approach it from a different point of view, try to get a different perspective on the issue. And this year, the perspective we're looking at is all about happiness. Are you happy at work? Are your employees happy at work? Are you happy at home? What is happiness for you? Have you defined it as, are you getting enough of it? In doing that this year, we've really selected the three people that we feel have really made significant contributions to the accomplishment of happiness. If either have companies that are models for happiness, or they have written significant books about happiness that we think that our members can learn from. And I want to just give you a taste of a little bit of that today to kind of reinforce why we should be looking at happiness. You know, one of the people that we selected to really talk to about happiness is Ted Leonis. He's the former vice chairman of AOL. He's the owner of the NBA Wizards, the NHL Capitals, the WNBA Mystics, Verizon Center, the CEO of Snag Films, the founder of Revolution Funds. Did you get the idea that he's successful? Yeah, he's absolutely successful. And we talked to Ted about happiness and how he approaches happiness. And his point was, you know, it took a life-threatening event for him to really come to grips with what is happiness all about and how do I get it. I'm not going to tell you the whole story, but he was on an airplane that was having problems while it was in the air, and there were moments or a period of time when they thought that the plane may go down and that none of them would survive. And in that moment or in that period of time, Ted looked at his life with a different perspective. Said, you know, I got all these business successes, but am I happy? What am I doing? And as a result of that event, you know, once he got back on the ground, everybody was okay. Once he got back on the ground, he decided to approach happiness much like he's approached business. You know, what's his vision for happiness? What's the goals? Is there a systematic way of doing it? What are some of my underlying beliefs or values that contribute to being happy? And he made a list of things, six things that he felt needed to be done to embark on this journey of happiness in your life and in your business to be successful. And, you know, I'm just going to mention these briefly because I really want you to go find Ted's book, The Business of Happiness, Ted Leonis, L-E-O-N-S-I-S. It's probably on Amazon like everything else in the world. Get this book and read it. It will make you think about this topic in a different way. He says you need to make a life list. This is a list of goals you want to accomplish. This is not a bucket list. This is a list of real goals that you want to accomplish. These are things that the accomplishment of each one of them will make you happier, both in your business and in your personal life. He wants things on there that you're serious about accomplishing, not whimsical things, okay? He says, besides your life list, you need to have multiple communities of interest. You need to have a diversity of people or groups that you can go to, much like Rath talked about the fact that we had to have eight different kinds of friends, going from the builder to the champion to the collaborator to the companion. Well, Ted approached it from a different point of view and said you need these kinds of communities. You need a family community, a workplace community, a fitness community, a charitable community, whatever it is. But you need different communities of interest to keep you sharp and alive and in perspective with the world. His third point was you need outlets for self-expression. You know, where, what do you do to get your self-expression out? You know, we can't satisfy it all on the computer keyboard. Now, for some of you, that may be a way of self-expression. Maybe you're writing the next world's great novel. Maybe you're a painter. Maybe you like to build models. Maybe your self-expression is creating things out in your workshop. But he talks about the fact that you need to have some type of outlet for your self-expression. And I'm just going to add to that that the many people that I've talked to that have moved from a full-time involvement in their work to a part-time involvement have found that if they can fill the gap of not working with things that are physical, things that take their hands to be involved in, not sitting in a chair and reading, but actually doing something that involves motor skills, that those people are much happier, much healthier, they live longer, and they seem more satisfied. Ted talks about number four on his list is empathy through giving back. You know, happiness isn't all about you. Let's not be that self-centered. Happiness is about giving back to other people. He talks about a higher calling, whatever you want to call that. You know, for me, it's my belief in God. For you, I don't know what it might be, but it's belief in something beyond yourself that sort of gives a purpose to why we're here and where you're going. And the last thing is gratitude. And you know, for gratitude, we were introduced to, or I was introduced to, Walter Green. He wrote a book called, let's see, what is it called here? I'll find it in just a minute. It's sitting on my desk someplace. But Walter Green, Green, G-R-E-E-N, that's real easy, wrote this book that says, you know, he decided to look at the people who had a life-changing impact on him. And he ended up making a list of 44 people that he felt had contributed significantly to improving his life. And then he developed a plan to go meet with each one of these people and to let them know what they had done for them, to express his gratitude, tell them how important they were in his life, and sort of follow up and start to stay in touch. So this is a little beyond just maintaining friendships and networking. This is beyond acknowledging what people have done for you. You know, how many people could you think of right now in the next 30 seconds that have had an impact on your life that maybe you never shared with them? You never really took the time to tell them that. I had a call earlier in the week from a member of our forum and a coaching client, not a current member, has not been a member for maybe 7 or 8 years, who called to talk to me because he thought I could fit in a situation in his company. But he told me, he said, you know, I've told people that you are the number one person that I would name who's had the most impact on my career, my business career. I was stunned. He had never said that to me. The fact that we haven't been doing business together for 8 years, I guess I could have drawn the conclusion that maybe he wasn't happy with what we had done together. But that wasn't the case at all. You know, it made me feel really good. It stayed with me for a long time, and it's going to continue to stay with me. So Walter Green makes the point that get out there and let people know what they've done and share your gratitude with them. Now, if you read his book, he's got some really creative ways to do that. He made a big thing of it. I'm not going to go into it because, again, hey, this is a book that you really should buy, book that you should read, that should be on your desk, that I should know the name of it, and I'm just at a total loss. It slipped my mind here, but it might just be gratitude. This is the moment. That's the title of the book. This is the moment. Walter Greene. Again, Amazon, Google, wherever you want to go to look for these things. The third author that we selected, the third individual that we selected to help share with us in our weekend strategies for success is Tony Hsieh. And Tony is the founder of Zappos. You've probably heard of Zappos. You know, Tony built LifeLink Exchange, which is a successful company, sold it to Microsoft for $265 million. He joined Zappos when they were doing $1 million in sales. He grew it to over $1 billion in just 8 years. Zappos was picked as one of the 100 best places to work in America. He then sold the company to Amazon for $1.2 billion. By the way, Tony's 38 years old. You know, Tony wrote a book called Delivering Happiness. When it first came out in 2010, it was the number one book for 27 consecutive weeks on the bestseller list, and it tells the story of how Zappos as a company uses happiness as their business model. Now, can you argue with a company that's doing $1 billion worth of business and they're crediting this to happiness? You know, this is something that Tony's got in this book. He goes on and credits a lot of this to a number of things. One of it is he shares with you Zappos's 10 core values, and he talks about the importance of really understanding your core values. But the basic theme is to understand the culture in your company and to promote the culture that you have. Along these lines, one of the things that Zappos does every year is they produce a book that's called The Culture Book. I have in front of me the 2010 Culture Book that Zappos put out. It's about 300 pages. What is a culture book? Let me just share with you what he says. The culture book is an annual tradition for the Zappos family. Every year I send an email to our employees asking people to write a few paragraphs about what the Zappos culture means to them. Except for typos, it's unedited because one of our core values is to build open and honest relationships with our communicators. This is a book where they ask employees to write about what the culture is, what the values are, what it means to them. They ask not only employees, but they ask their employees, they ask their customers, and they ask their people that they're doing business with. Can you imagine a 300-page book with pictures and statements by your staff, your customers, your clients, talking about your company culture, your company values? Come on, some of us have to look at the back of our business card to understand what our mission statement is or our values are. This is a company that puts out a book that they make available to everybody, sharing what their values, what their core culture really is all about. I'm amazed at it. You know, this is not a company that commissioned a graphic artist and commissioned somebody to wordsmith their core values and then had it painted in the lobby wall, and there it ended. You know, it'll stay there till the wall's torn down, but nobody pays any attention to it. No, this is a company that lives their core values on a daily basis, that walks through it. You know, what are some of their core values? Hey, let me just give you their top 10 core values. Talk about happiness. Number one, delivering wow through service. Two, embrace and drive change. Three, create fun and a little weirdness. Four, be adventurous, creative, and open-minded. Five, pursue growth and learning. Six, build open and honest relationship with communication. Seven, build a positive team and family spirit. Eight, do more with less. Nine, be passionate and determined. And 10, be humble. This is a company that wants to create a happy place. This is a company that's been acknowledged as one of the 100 best, happiest places to work in the United States. And why? They're not doing this because they have money to throw away. They're doing this because it makes it a better place. It makes it a better place that retains employees. It makes it a better place that makes it easier to recruit employees. It makes it a better place that makes a lot of money, $1 billion worth of sales and bottom line profits. So that's our story today about happiness, okay? Now let me step away from the textbooks for a minute and share with you a couple of examples that I've personally observed about happiness. One that you can relate to, where's the happiest place on earth? Disneyland. Everybody knows it's the happiest place on earth. Why do we know it's the happiest place on earth? Well, one, they keep telling us it's the happiest place on earth. Their commercials are on the radio and on the TV and every place else. So what about your company? What are you doing to publicize and communicate the fact that it's a happy place? The other thing Disneyland does is they've created a physical layout that makes it a happy place to be. You know, when you go to Disneyland, what are you aware of? One, it's clean. Two, it's organized. Three, there's music, happy music playing in the background, okay? You know, if you look real close, you might look at some of the other things they've done from a design perspective. Do you know, as you walk down that famous Main Street when you enter Disneyland, all those buildings are done at three-quarter scale. From an architectural point of view, they're all built at three-quarter scale. Why three-quarter scale? Was it because they didn't have the money to build them at full scale? No. It was because they felt that it would be a friendlier place. It would be a friendlier street, a friendlier environment if it was three-quarter scale. So the physical layout has a lot to do with it. I'm working with one of our clients just finished their annual strategic planning meeting, and one of the things that they identified that's at one of their five top priorities this year is to relook at the physical layout of the office. They said, hey, it's been this way for a number of years. It was cutting edge when we moved in, but hey, it's gotten a little old, a little tired. What can we do to make it feel like more fun? That when you walk in, it looks creative, it looks inviting, okay? Physical layout. What's the other thing that Disneyland does? What about the people? You know, we've talked about, you read about, you hear a lot today about the who in your life. And everybody's saying that, you know, if you know what your who is, then you can attract people who believe in the same who. Well, what is this who? The who is what you're passionate about. Nobody has a business just to make money, but almost all businesses are supposed to make money. But you have it for some other reason. You have it because you had a burning desire. You wanted to be involved in cars. You liked cars. So you created a repair shop to make money and let you play with cars. Or you created a car dealership so you could sell cars. Or you got into photography because you love photography, but you're in the business of selling stock photos or doing weddings or whatever else. You're passionate about something that has to do with your business. People who do not have a reason for being in business other than making money usually aren't in the business very long and aren't very happy about it and have a hard time attracting and convincing other people to get in this business. What is it about Disneyland? If you talk to anybody there, they feel they are lucky to be employed by Disneyland. They go through an extensive screening process, whether you're looking to get hired as somebody to sweep up the streets or you're looking to be one of those invisible people in one of the costumes, okay? Either way, once you're finally selected, you feel like, man, I passed. I met the test, met the challenge. And therefore, these people feel it's an exclusive place to work. One of the other nice things, it's a high-profile company. You know, it's kind of nice to work for a company that when you say their name, people know what they do. People have heard of them. The other thing is Disney attracts people who have the same passion they do. What is Disneyland really all about? Okay. Doug Gefeller's interpretation, it's all about theatrics. It's a show. Going to Disneyland is going to a show. It's being entertained. And what kind of people do they tend to get to work there? People who are interested in theatrics. Maybe people who don't want to be on the stage and be the leading lady or the leading man, but maybe people who want to be behind the stage, who want to deal with the show, who want to be part of the fantasy, the presentation. I found that's the kind of people, whether you're talking to the people in the costumes, you know, or whether you're talking to the people in the store selling you things, they know their product. They know their service. They know their role. They're excited about what they do. They're not just putting in 8 hours. That's what makes Disneyland happiest place on earth. It's they sell it. They physically believe it and put their money into the physical layout, and they attract people, and they make an environment where the people can be happy, and they're matched with what the company believes it's all about. Same thing Zappos talking about. Zappos says, hey, here's our culture. If you don't believe in it, don't come to work here. If you don't want to be a little weird, if you're put off by people who are a little weird, and if you've seen any pictures of what Zappos' office looks like, you know, this isn't the kind of office that the General Motors executive would walk in. He'd walk into that office and go, hey, we got to clean this place up. You know, let's take the partitions down. There's none of the artwork's been approved. Why are you dressed that way? What are you doing having a birthday party in the middle of the day? Why are you people parading around blowing gazoos? Zappos says we're a little weird. If you're a little weird, come to work here. We're going to be a good match. So that's what it's all about. Now, they got a lot of money, and you're going to go, okay, but I'm not Disneyland. I can't do that. Let me give you another example. A couple of weeks ago, I met two friends for breakfast at a place that I'd never been to before in San Clemente. It's actually at the San Clemente Inn, and it's called Adele's Cafe. And if you go on their website, it looks a little weird. They're talking about theatrical productions in the menu. You kind of have to search for the menu. Well, anyhow, somebody said this was a great place. Meet us there, Doug. And I said, okay, I'll meet you there. So I met him for breakfast early in the morning. We happened to get there at the same time, walked in at the same time, went through the lobby back to the cafe in the back of the inn. And here is this nice room. Probably could seat, I don't know, I'm guessing 50, 70 people, maybe 100, I don't know. Guess what? There's nobody there. We're going, are they closed today? There's nobody here. Somebody said this was a great place to go to eat. This is a place you have to see, Doug. Well, but there's nobody here. Great places are always full of people. What's going on here? And we're kind of hemming and hawing. We're thinking of walking back out. And suddenly this woman walks up and says, hey, guys, what's up? Sorry, I didn't hear you come in. I suppose you're wanting to know why nobody's here waiting on you. And here's this jolly woman, happy as a lark, as if doesn't have a care in the world. I kind of wondered, do you think she works here? She's too happy to be working. And she says, I didn't hear you. I was in the back making a cake. And I'm going, you're making a cake? And I said it out loud. She says, yeah, I'm making a cake for my mother. Okay, what do you say to that? I said, well, what kind of cake are you making? She says, funny you should ask. She said, it's a yellow cake with the chocolate frosting. And then she proceeds to tell me about her secret recipe for the chocolate frosting. Makes it really big and frothy on top. It's really sweet. It's, you know, that kind of cake that Mom used to make when we were kids. It's not the thing that comes out of the box. Sorry I can't share any of it with you. But, hey, let me seat you. We got a great breakfast going for you today. Where would you like to sit? We said, well, somebody said we should ask for booth number 9. And she laughs. The place is empty. Do you think you can seat us at booth number 9? Well, booth number 9 is by the stage. They also provide entertainment, not at breakfast time. And we went and sat at booth number 9. It was the biggest booth. It was kind of fun. You know, what was my impression walking into this place? Well, the physical layout wasn't too impressive. It was adequate. My first impression from a human being was this woman who greeted us. She was down to earth. She was friendly. This was somebody that I'd like to have her be my friend. She says, while you're seating yourself, I'm going to get you some coffee. What do you want? I said, well, I want decaf. She says, don't have any decaf that's hot. I'm going to make you a fresh pot. Don't get anxious. I'll be back as soon as it's ready. I won't forget you. So we sat down. She brought us a coffee. She brought us the menus. We said we hadn't been there before. So she's given us her tips on what we should eat. But it doesn't sound like a sales pitch. She's sharing with us what she likes to eat, okay? She brings us our food. As we're having our business, our business, our social discussion, she keeps coming back and checking on us. Now, she doesn't interrupt the conversation because we're all three talking. We haven't seen each other. But she's checking as she goes along. Finally, she comes back and she says, "You guys going to stop talking for a minute? Because it's joke time." "It's joke time?" She says, "Yeah, I got a good joke for you today." And she proceeds to tell us a hilarious joke. And we laugh and she walks away. Well, one of my buddies, you know, next time she walks back by to check on us, he says, "Hey, I got a joke for you." And he shares a joke with her. She says, "That's a good one. I'm going to share that with the rest of the people." When it came time to leave, when we paid the bill, we got up to walk out. By this time, there are quite a few people having breakfast. She walked out with us. Now, she just didn't say, "Thanks, it's nice to have you here." She walked out with us. "Hey, it's great. How'd you like everything? Was it great?" Guess who she was? This was Adele for Adele's Cafe. This was the woman herself. This was the owner. She was waiting on us as if she was one of the people that was hired to be there. This was a person that was happy. Her happiness about what she did, her happiness about willing to share it, bubbled over and made us happy. Do you know what it's like to eat breakfast in an empty restaurant? It's pretty depressing. It wasn't in this place. We felt like we were in the middle of a party because of her bigger-than-life personality. That's what we're talking about in terms of happiness. Is your workplace like that? If it isn't, you need to work on it. Because remember how we started this conversation. Happiness pays off. Bottom-line profits, top-line revenue, more customers, better retention of employees, easier recruiting, more engagement by your staff, tapping into their creative juices. Hey, none of that happens if it isn't a happy place. So, that's all I have to share with you today. If you aren't happy, you need to get to work. It's all up to you. You can do it. I've enjoyed sharing this with you today. I hope you've got something out of it. I know that our executives, when we do our weekend strategic strategies for success, are really going to enjoy this topic. We're going to get into it a lot deeper, but I just couldn't resist giving you a tip of the iceberg, sharing a little bit of it with you about what a powerful concept this really can be for you. So let me just say, this is Doug Gefeller on behalf of Critical Mass and the Coaching Perspective, hoping that we've given you information today that's going to help you make better, more informed business decisions.
You've been listening to Critical Mass from the Coaching Perspective, only on OC Talk Radio, the happiest place on the radio.